This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So the G7 is well and truly underway now. Katie, what are we seeing this morning?
So we're now seeing the G7 move to something Boris Johnson wants to talk about, which is vaccines. And this is ultimately bringing all these world leaders together in terms of how do you get through the pandemic globally. And particularly poorer countries, what duty is on the leaders gathered, many of whom are leading countries which are very far ahead with their vaccine rollout to help out. And can you do it, as someone said, by the end of the year? I think we're going to be hearing various strategies for it. I mean, in terms of what Boris Johnson wants to do, he says the UK is going to start donating coronavirus vaccines to poorer countries in the next few weeks. More than 100 million surplus doses will be delivered in the next year. And then we've also got Joe Biden, who has promised 500 million doses of Pfizer vaccines to 92 low and middle income countries. And I think there's a question on A, what is the times frame on all this? And two, I think, particularly on the UK side, the UK's vaccination programme is not complete. As more time goes on, it gets more complicated. I'm sure we're going to talk about it shortly, but even if you look at the chat around June 21, there is a sense that, oh, well, is one jab enough? Should you wait for everyone to have one jab? And you feel the conversation is inevitably going to move on to, the scientists then saying, well, actually, shouldn't we just wait for everyone to have two jabs? Then we might get into a conversation about booster shots. So I think while there is obviously good intention in terms of pushing out these vaccines across the world, you can see how, as I suppose countries like the UK, and other European countries advance, it might not actually be a case that we are done with this. Now, the UK has over-ordered, but I think it is quite staggered in terms of achieving it. And then I think the other thing that we're going to hear about is this idea of whether you should lift intellectual property on all these vaccines, which is something I don't think the UK is pushing for. The US is fond of it as an idea, and the EU leaders are more against. And will that actually move the dial?
James, on vaccines, we've talked on this podcast before about vaccine diplomacy and how China and Russia are ahead of the game on this. If the Prime Minister gets what he wants and the Western world really gets together to donate vaccines next year, I mean, they might still be a bit too late. And also, they might not be able to get everyone to agree. What are the chances of getting the rest of the G7 to sign?
I think it is very difficult. Joe Biden's 500 million doses sounds generous until you realise that's 3% of the doses that would be needed. And I think there is an issue here. I think Katie touched on it, which is the need for booster shots is making it difficult. Western countries are reluctant to hand over their vaccine supplies when they think they might need to be giving another shot to their populations later in the year. Secondly, the whole variant issue has made this more complicated because variants are making people want to mix and match vaccines. That is becoming an increasingly popular idea. So you might have thought 6 months ago the UK would say, right, we've got AstraZeneca, it's manufactured here, we'll use all of that, so we'll happily give away the rest of the stuff. They don't want to do that now because the theory goes that it will be probably more likely in the autumn to give people a different booster shot than their first double dose of vaccine that they had. The next problem is that against all these variants, it appears that these mRNA vaccines are more effective. Those are more difficult to manufacture. And then you run into the India problem. India is essentially the pharmacy of the developing world and long has been. The severity of its COVID outbreak, which is keeping Narendra Modi, the Indian Prime Minister, away from this summit, despite being invited by Boris Johnson, he's only joining by video link, means that India is now basically banned export. And so India, which was going to make vaccines, both in conjunction with the UK using the Oxford vaccine and for the Quad, this kind of what one could crudely call a kind of anti-China alliance of Australia, Japan, India and the US, it is now just concentrating, for obvious reasons, on its own population. So I think this is really tricky. But I think if the Western world can't do this, I think there are two consequences. One, who fills the gap, as you alluded to? And secondly, remember that we have a climate change conference at the end of the year. And I think if the developing world feels that they have been left behind in this instance, in left on their own essentially to fight COVID, they will be less inclined to listen to kind of honeyed words about international cooperation on that.
Well, I think it also puts us in a difficult position because this country seems to want to pull up the drawbridge while variants are out there. But the less vaccinated the rest of the world is, the more likely we'll be protecting ourselves from variants.
Yeah, I mean, there is a kind of crude statement. I mean, two things are true. One, this thing isn't over until you have managed to kind of wipe the disease out on a global scale in terms of getting back to normal of international travel and the like. But the second point is, it's a very unusual leader who's going to take any risk in terms of sending vaccines abroad until they've done their own population. You know, Joe Biden is clearly a more internationalist figure than Donald Trump, but he has maintained, up until very recently, all the really strict US export bans, not just on vaccines, but on things that you use to manufacture vaccines. Mm. And I think that is one of the things that is difficult here. And I think another factor which is difficult here is countries are prepared to donate some to COVAX, but you know, even the US is holding back some because countries want to use some of those in their own policy. You know, for example, in the US there's a debate about whether, you know, it should prioritize Latin American countries through which people are traveling before trying to enter the US illegally, in that, you know, a deal for kind of greater border enforcement in return for vaccines. You know, that kind of thing. I mean, I think this is part of what makes this so tricky.
And Katie, earlier in the week, we were also talking about Brexit and the demarche that the Biden administration secretly issued to the UK side. How have Brexit tensions played out so far today? Are they subsiding a bit more?
Well, I think all the papers are filled with photos of the Johnsons loving with the Bidens. So Boris Johnson and Joe Biden, but also Carrie Johnson posing on the beach with her young child, and then also Jill Biden. And I think that this is one of the reasons everyone is now, you know, seeing it as there is a potential spanner in the works, but actually a charm offensive got things back on track. And I think in an odd way, because there was so much in public which was negative before the meet, it was almost as though both sides were in pains to try and move it along. But I don't think the issue is completely gone yet. I don't think Boris Johnson is out of the woods in the sense that there's still a chance the Northern Ireland Protocol could come up at the G7 and cause some problems. You have Emmanuel Macron, who has today spoke about how the EU will not move on this. And you can imagine in some of the bilateral meetings, Boris Johnson will be having meetings with other EU leaders, it could bubble up. And we've got to then see if anyone manages to ask Joe Biden a question on it, which catches them at a different time. So I think that generally speaking, on the UK side, they're quite relieved with how things have gone since that front page. But there are still several days to go and there are some unhappy Europeans.
James, what can we expect to see?
Well, as Katie said, you know, we know that Ursula von der Leyen and Charles Michel will bring it up with Boris Johnson. I think we can expect the EU member state leaders who are there to do the same. I think Emmanuel Macron has kind of indulged in some kind of classic Macron pre-summit diplomacy, essentially telling Boris Johnson, forget about it on the Northern Ireland Protocol, and perhaps more interestingly, almost telling Joe Biden to forget about it on China, saying that, you know, it's his view that France and Europe should not be China's vassal, but nor should they be aligned with the US on this question. This is one of the reasons why the Biden-Johnson meeting went well yesterday, is that, you know, yes, Biden is proud of his Irish roots, and yes, he would rather that, you know, he is concerned about the Good Friday Agreement and the protocol. But ultimately, on the big question of this G7, how does the West position itself in terms of Russia and China? You know, the UK is more closely aligned with the US than anybody else. You know, on the China question, I mean, you can essentially say that the UK, the US, Japan and Canada are in the same place, with France and Germany in subtly, in their own ways, in different places. And I mean, this is the big question here. I think Macron's talk about, oh, we won't do that, actually kind of puts him slightly on the other side of the US position. Now, it's worth remembering that the US will defer to Dublin whether the Good Friday Agreement is, you know, being respected or not. But Jake Sullivan, Joe Biden's National Security Advisor, in the kind of run-up to the summit, was kind of clear that while he wants the kind of protocol to be respected, he was kind of hoping for what you could kind of call about kind of flexibilities in its implementation. And so I think Macron's tone there in some ways will enable the UK side to say, look, it's not just us being difficult here, you know, the EU have been difficult. But I think there's also another point here which the UK should learn from, which is its best chance of getting stuff with the protocol is to keep the issue quiet. Whenever it is dramatic and there is noise around it, ears perk up in EU capitals. And remember, with the exception of Dublin, pretty much every EU capital is more concerned about the integrity of a single market than protecting the Good Friday Agreement. And so they think, well, hang on a second, we're already a bit slightly uncomfortable with this protocol and think it gives away too much, and we don't want any more concessions. That's one of the reasons why it would actually be in the UK's interest to really keep this quiet and kind of make it all sound as boring as possible, rather than headlines about sausage wars.
Katie and James, thanks very much. And you can subscribe to this podcast wherever you get your podcast from. And if you enjoyed it, but only if you enjoyed it, do rate and review us. Thanks for listening.